This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne!
Hello, Jennifer! It is time for another episode of Solve It for Kids, where we stay right here on the surface of the Earth, and we talk about one of the things that I think everybody is interested in.
Oh, this is intriguing. What problem are we solving today?
How much weight can a crane lift?
How much weight can a crane lift? Are we having another engineer on the show, Jeff? Who is our guest?
We are having another engineer, and he works on something really cool. Today, we have the awesome Luis Duque, who is a bridge engineer.
Oh, this is going to be so exciting. Welcome to the show, Luis.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Oh, we are so excited to have you. So let's just jump right in. So you're a bridge engineer. Can you tell us, what does that mean? Do you just build bridges, or how does that work?
Well, as you can imagine, bridges are built all over the US and all over the world every single day to connect communities, connect people and everything. I do completely the opposite. I work on demolition of bridges. So taking those bridges, old bridges down. And it's
cool.
Yeah, you have to engineer that. Actually, the company I work for right now helped dismantle the San Francisco Oakland Bay Bridge in California. And they released a movie just a couple weeks ago. So if anyone is interested about the work that we do, they can go look it up. It's called Demo, and it's on Apple TV, and it's like an amazing movie. I was like on the edge of my seat the whole time. It was great.
Excellent.
That is really interesting.
That is terrific. And I had no idea coming in that when we were going to be talking to you, that bridge engineer was going to be actually bridge sort of unengineering.
Yeah.
So, okay, bridge demolition. Can you give us the overview? Like, what is involved in taking down a bridge?
The design is very similar to when you are actually building a new bridge. Obviously, you have to consider different loads, like construction loads, equipment that you need to use on the bridge sometimes to take it down. Stability is a big one, just because you're taking all of these different pieces and raising and everything the bridge was designed for and it's been using for so many years. And deterioration, I think some of the steel bridges, especially in California or other coastal areas, have a lot of like rust, which affects the capacity of all these structural members. So those are kind of some of the considerations that we take as engineers designing the dismantling and all and removal of these bridges.
Okay. So when you demolish them, I mean, of course, I'm imagining like this big explosion, but I'm guessing that's probably not what you do. Do you use cranes and stuff like that to take it apart?
Yeah, we use, I mean, cranes or just other big equipment. Sometimes we just lower big sections of the bridge into barges if we're over water. Sometimes you have to do it very slowly with cranes and you take like different members at a time. But it kind of depends on the bridge, depends on where you are. Obviously, over the water is kind of the most challenging part because you cannot drop anything on the water, obviously, for environmental reasons.
That's what I was wondering.
So it takes some effort from the contractor, from the engineer to design debris containment systems and then making sure when they're cutting, nothing really falls on the water. So there's a lot of different challenges for sure.
Wow. That sounds like it's the deconstructing of a puzzle. A lot of times we are talking about, engineering is the building of a puzzle piece by piece. And I think listeners can relate to that because a lot of us build puzzles. But when we pull it apart, there's no care or concern. We just want to get that buddy back in the box.
You just wreck it apart.
Yeah, it sounds like you really have to take care of knowing what materials are in the bridge, what pieces may be weak in terms of falling down. So when you are dismantling a bridge, do you always say start from the middle? Or always start from the sides, or does it depend on the type of bridge?
Yeah, so it depends. That example of the San Francisco Oakland Bay Bridge,
yes,
they basically deconstructed from the middle, but that's because one, it was the way that it was constructed, so we knew that that load path would work. But when you're cutting something, you have to think about where the load is going after it's cut. Like, it needs to go somewhere to the supports.
Right.
You can just cut in the middle and expect that all the load get distributed to the supports without really having the systems that will take care of that. So it's important to know that. I mean, you have cantilever systems which can span over a support. I think the San Francisco Oakland Bay Bridge was somewhere in the 700 feet, which is a huge cantilever. There were some additional loads to help achieve that kind of span. And then you slowly start cutting it back. Other places in the same bridge, the type of structure that was in there, the trusses, could only be dismantled by just basically cutting the ends near the supports and then dropping the whole thing to barges. So it depends on the type of bridge, the type of system that the bridge was designed for. And it's up to us kind of to figure out what the best approach will be.
So, I mean, that's amazing. But just for some listeners who might not understand, could you explain to them what load means?
I mean, if you basically are standing, you feel some pressure from the ground on your feet. That's basically the load. If you change and you walk, or if you go up the stairs, down the stairs, the amount of load that you feel under the feet is going to vary. And that's because the load path changes a little bit between the two feet you have. If you were to have like four legs, you basically have half the pressure on your feet. So
So it's distributed more evenly. Okay.
Right. And that's kind of what we're looking at when we design these structures, the size of these members, the areas, is basically to figure out if a beam or a column that is 500 square feet or 500 square inches of area can support, I don't know, 100 pounds or something like that, or 100,000 pounds. That makes a little more sense. So making sure like the area and making sure that the amount of load going through these members, it will be supported by those members.
Wow.
Okay. That's a lot of details. And
I mean, you think about that when you're building the bridge, you don't think about it when you take it down, right?
But they have to, it sounds like.
Yes.
And that actually is. So you have to know everything about what that bridge can do while it's up. And the way my brain is thinking of it, you are a professional reverse engineer. You are taking it apart in a way that will allow it to be taken apart safely. So that spurred a question in my head of, when you were going through school and becoming a civil engineer, which you were talking about just before we started, is bridge engineering is a part of civil engineering. Did you know that you wanted to be on the deconstruction side, the bridge demolition side? Did you know that, or did you just kind of end up in that area?
I didn't even know it was an option, to be honest. I mean, when I was a student, and I'm sure a lot of students can relate, you think of civil engineering, you think of, especially structural engineering, just like buildings and bridges.
Right.
And that's basically it. Like, I don't think we really know what a structural engineer is capable of doing. I mean, you have structural engineers working on rockets, making sure the structure is
exactly. Sure. Yes.
So there's so many things that we can do, but when I was a student, I had like no idea what the opportunities were.
Okay.
Well, okay. So let's go back to how you take it apart and let's talk a little bit about the cranes, because how do you know? Because, you know, the problem that we were talking about was, how do you know how much weight a crane can lift? So how do you know what length of sections of bridge to cut apart, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I mean, because, you know, you can't take the whole thing down at once. Yeah. How do you decide where to cut it?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on how much weight that section of bridge weighs, as well as what type of crane you have. So there's cranes from all different sizes, from like really small ones to like really, really large ones that are capable of lifting really, really large loads. And I think the easiest way to think about it is, you hold a glass of water really close to your body, it's not going to weigh as much, or even your phone if you have it with you. As you extend the arm and the load is farther from like your center of gravity, so like mainly just your body, you're going to start feeling it weighs a lot more than it actually weighed when you had it like really close to you. So it's the same with the crane. And they use counterweight to kind of balance a load and make sure it can lift a little more than if they didn't have any counterweight. So that's kind of how you think about it. And then you have to think about basically the boom radius. So the boom is the arm that is picking the load, wherever you're picking it from.
Right.
The radius is how far that point is from the crane. So in this case, like the arm, how far is your arm from the phone you're picking up?
Right.
And you have to think of the boom length. So how far the boom is like stretched up and over to calculate what the capacity is. Because then when the boom is super far from or like really extended, then you start getting into like bending into that boom or some other forces that you need to consider. So there's different factors, but the best example is just hold something in your hand, keep it close to your body, and it's really easy to carry. But as you extend it out, it's going to start getting really, really heavy.
I'm sensing math and physics here, right? So you probably do the mathematical calculations of all of this, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. I can't skip over this. Listeners, I don't know if you heard that, but there was just a mini challenge, not labeled as a challenge.
There you go.
So Luis just said a glass of water. I'd like to up that to maybe a textbook or two. Ooh. Hold those close in and then stretch those arms out and feel that weight difference for what he was just explaining. So that leads me to my next question. When you cut a section, like when Jennifer asked that question, how do you know how much that section weighs to factor into that math calculation?
Well, it depends on what you're cutting. So if you cut a piece of steel, you know the steel density, you know the steel area, and then you can calculate the volume of that section. We have nominal weights for like wide flange beams or just beams, like structural members. They already give you the weight per foot of the beam. So we have a 20-foot beam that weighs, I don't know, 100 pounds per foot. You know the weight of that by just multiplying those two numbers.
I get it. So simple math problem, but you will get some of the unknowns given to you.
Some of them. Sometimes you just need to estimate as best you can. And obviously these cranes have, when they pick the load, they have a sensor that tells them how much load is in them. So you can start adjusting depending on if you're too high or too low. And you know, you basically have these many picks that you calculated by hand or by using a computer or something.
Okay.
And if when they pick it, they say, oh, this is a little heavier than thought, then you go back and see, is there any critical picks that we need to maybe take a second look at?
Right.
And that way you can adjust kind of based on that.
I didn't know they had scales. That's cool.
So, okay. Big question. How long does it take to demolish a bridge? Because again, I'm seeing the movies, right? You put dynamite across it, off it goes. But it's really sounding like this is a couple weeks, maybe a month or so.
Yeah, depending on the bridge, the complexity of the bridge, it could take months, could take months to demolish it.
Months?
Wow. Okay.
And then where does it go? Like, what do you do with all of the pieces?
Sometimes they are able to recycle a lot of the steel, especially concrete also gets recycled into, they just crush it and use it as gravel, basically for other concrete or for other purposes. So a lot of times they do recycle quite a bit of that material.
Okay. So we're talking about bridges, and most bridges in the country are for automobiles. Obviously, there's trains as well. But we've been driving cars in America now for more than 100 years. How many bridges in America need to come down and get replaced? Like, I don't need an exact number, but you have to have some better idea than I, like, is it 90%? Is it 9%?
We're not going to hold you to the answer.
ASCE, the American Society of Civil Engineers, does a infrastructure report card every so often, I think every 5 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And that number has been lingering into the 7 to 12% of bridges are structurally deficient, which would require either heavy maintenance or replacement. I don't know if that number is exact, but it's around that. Mm-hmm. I think it's somewhere in between. I don't want to say an exact number because I'm going to be off, but it's a lot of them. It's a lot of them.
Okay. And do you by chance know how many bridges are in the United States?
I don't. I know it's in the hundreds of thousands.
All right. That's a question for Google.
Yeah.
We'll ask that one later.
Yeah. Well, so I live in Florida and we have a lot of bridges because we have a lot of waterways, but honestly, they inspect the bridges here quite a lot and you always see them doing work on them. I'm assuming that's because we live in such a moisture laden area that affects the materials of the bridge. I guess my question is, once you take the bridge down, do you normally build another one? Or I guess other engineers go, do they normally put one back up there?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Bridges are usually inspected every couple of years. So they're inspected pretty frequently. And for large bridges, it could take up to like a couple of years to inspect the whole bridge.
Right.
But usually they build the bridge first, the new one, reroute traffic, and then the demolition team comes. And
oh, that makes sense.
Yep.
Okay. Oddball question. Do you happen to have a favorite bridge? Not necessarily one that you've destroyed, but...
I'm currently working on the Golden Gate Bridge, which is an amazing bridge.
Wow,
we're not taking it down. We're just doing some maintenance work and everything, but it's an amazing bridge. It's just so iconic. And I think a lot of people can identify it, even if they don't live in the US. So that's one of them that are just really interesting. And it's been a pleasure to work on it.
Super cool that you're working on that one.
Yeah. So, okay. So now let's talk about when you work on a bridge, are you climbing up it or going under it? Or just walking along the top of it?
I mean, it depends. Obviously, our work is mainly just the calculations, the design and everything. But we do have to go out to the bridge and inspect certain areas that may be critical. So for the Golden Gate Bridge, you kind of usually are on the top. And then you either take, there's just a lot of access, ladders and everything. And you go like basically under where the traffic is going. There's maintenance stairs and everything. So it's pretty high. I haven't really been there, but there's just different ways that we can get to those places if we need to.
Yeah. So what you're missing is I'm shaking my head going, no, because I'm afraid of heights. But I would watch you do that and think it was very cool.
And what our listeners are missing is Mr. Jeff is like, can I go on a field trip to do that with you? That would be awesome. So is there something, we've had one other bridge engineer on, well, I've been Jen's co-host, and this was a fun question for me to ask. As a bridge engineer, a lot of our listeners are obviously kids, and they're not going to be at the bridge building or bridge demolition stage until later on in life. But they drive around in mom and dad's car all the time and are going over and under bridges. Is there something about bridges specifically that you would want kids to maybe start noticing more rather than just, oh, we went over a bridge or under a bridge?
I think one of the most important aspects of a bridge is like what they're going over and like how far they're going, like how big the space under the bridge is. So if you look at like a pencil, just imagine a pencil. And if you put some load on it, if you put it between two books or something, it's going to tend to break pretty easily. Imagine that pencil was like twice as long or three times as long. It's going to break even easier. So the fact that we can span 2,000 feet between those supports is just simply amazing.
Yes.
It is. Okay. I mean, again, that's physics right there and a lot of engineering. Since we were talking about kids, what did you want to be when you were a kid? Were you always interested in bridges or did, you know, kind of like, how did you get to where you are now?
So I always wanted to be either a civil engineer or architect. My dad's an architect. So I was around construction and the way like his work and everything. So I knew I either wanted to be an engineer or I wanted to be an architect. Obviously, I was a lot better at math than I was at drawing and a lot better at physics than anything. So I leaned towards civil engineering and obviously structural engineering as the field within that.
That's really cool. Do you have any tips for kids that might want to get into civil engineering, like what they could work on or whatever to get to where you are?
I mean, you obviously have to know math. I think that's kind of part of the work we do. But with computers, with all the resources we have right now, it really isn't that big of a deal if you're not like great or amazing at math. It's better to have an interest in like solving problems. A lot of what we do is just solving problems, not like just crunch numbers and figure out the math. Like the math will come as a second stage in the design process. So obviously building something is just exciting as an engineer, just making sure like everything fits, just solving problems and doing all these things, I think is super important.
That is very cool. And the reason I said that was very cool is the math comes up a lot, especially when we're talking to engineers. And sometimes it just kind of stops there. Oh, you got to be good at math. But you followed that up with, if you're not excellent at math, there are computers out there. You know, I know Jen and I are a little bit older, and both of us remember that every one of our math teachers said, no, you will not walk around with a calculator in your pocket all the time, every day. Turns out, teacher.
Yeah, we do.
Exactly. Turns out, teacher. Yes, we are. So do I absolutely Yeah. So do I absolutely need to be that genius in, you know, do I have to be the best in the class? Do I have to be a grade level or two above? And what you just said, I think is really going to hit home where if you marry up, look, you're a good math student. You know, it's not confusing you. It's not, you know, making you kind of thing in math class, but you also like to build things. Like you said, you were around your dad and an architect and you were building real things, wandering around with your dad. If you can start to put those interests together, even if math may not be an interest, as long as it's a skill that you can develop, there are pathways that are out there. And like you said, you didn't know you were going to be a bridge engineer. And even when you started civil engineering, you didn't know you were going to be a bridge deconstructionist. Which, even though you're not blowing them up, like Jen keeps thinking in her mind, that is just cool. So in your job, being a bridge deconstructionist right now, is that what you will continue to do? Or is there something that you would move along to next?
I think probably just saying the same, but like what I do right now, I think it's just so interesting to me. And just kind of a little reference from what you said before. There's a lot of contractors that actually end up being engineers after they work as contractors just because they are interested in the math and how everything works.
Really?
I encourage everyone to like watch a movie. There's a really something that really stood out to me because they are trying to take this bridge apart. Obviously, super challenging, a lot of moving pieces, really large bridge going thousands of feet over water. And the contractors obviously have a lot of experience. They're very experienced. They know what they're doing.
Sure.
And when the engineers propose to basically cut the bridge in half, literally just cut it in half, everyone was like, that's not going to work. Like I've seen that happen, you cut things in half, but it's just the like showing them the process, the math, showing how the bridge was actually built that way. And just showing, they just really did a good job of showing the awe in their faces when they just cut the bridge in half and basically just stood there. Like nothing really happened. Which was designed to do that. Like nothing really failed, nothing really broke anything. It was just really amazing. And so as engineers, showing that process of explaining why some of these things happen, it just fascinated me.
Because of course, when you think, okay, we're going to cut something in half, you're going to think it's going to fall inward. That's what you would think. I'm guessing it's because the load was fairly perfectly balanced.
So the way that it's built. So imagine a cantilever is basically a beam with a larger backspan than it's able to go over the support a certain distance, depends on the design. So that's how that bridge was designed. There was a cantilever and then it connected to what they call the center span, which is basically a simple span. Just imagine a highway bridge or something.
Yes.
So the way that they were able to accomplish that was to put basically when you have that situation, top of the bridge is in compression, it's tend to like sag down.
Okay.
The bottom of the bridge is in tension, it's sagging down. The whole thing is kind of trying to rotate down. What they did is they applied forces, jack forces on the top and bottom core. So they were all in compression. And that's how it basically was designed at the beginning. So when you have that compression, that basically allows the bridge to stay in one piece and cantilever over that whole distance.
Wow. That's
hopefully that
so
made
cool.
sense.
It does.
Well, to us. And what we'll do is on the webpage for this episode, we will put a few graphics of bridges that explain load and cantilever. So I think it will for our listeners. But listeners, Jen and I just have our mouths open right now.
So a simple analogy, let me just explain something. Ooh, so you have a sling, those slings that you kind of bounce around.
Yes.
If you put it over something, you're just going to tend to like flop down, like nothing will happen.
Yes.
Put a rubber band around it. You're applying compression to that sling. It's going to go a lot farther than if it didn't have anything. So that's kind of a simple analogy.
Okay.
Just because it has like all that compression load into the sling, it's not going to let it kind of fall down.
Yeah. So a few years ago, it's been a while, I wrote a book about bridges. So now it's starting, a lot of your terms are starting to come back to me. Yeah. I was like, I remember some of this. But yes, well, I'll find a video or something that we can show on there. So everybody look for that on our website, solveitforkids.com. But I mean, I would have been like the contractors, though, honestly. I would have been standing there going, sure, cut this in half. Let's see what happens. It's going to fall. I would have been one of those like, wow, this is right. pretty cool.
And look up the San Francisco Oakland Bay Bridge demolition. Like it's, that's like an amazing image. It's, that kind of lever is like 700 feet. It's so long that...
That is wow. It's kind of hard that's to long. Holy cow.
Yeah. That's long. For as many guests as we've had, and a lot of them are fascinating, we've said, oh, we'd love to have you back. I feel like this one, I feel like Jen and I need to go watch this movie, and then we need to come back and have a part two to this conversation so that we can talk to you about how the bridge came down with Jen and I's understanding of having seen the movie.
Yeah,
so tell us the name of it again.
It's called Demo.
Demo.
Bay Bridge.
Okay.
That's
Demo
all it's
Bay
called.
Bridge. Okay.
Yep. And it's on Apple TV. It would be like really easy to find it. If you don't find it, let me know. I can send you the link.
Okay. So I have a question here about this. Can people come and watch this? And I know that sounds crazy because it probably takes months, but wouldn't that be a cool thing to do is yes. to watch them? Because I know like we've had downtown where I live, they've taken down buildings and they actually tell, first of all, they tell you to warn you, right?
Yeah.
Because you're going to hear this big noise. But I've had friends who have gone downtown and watched buildings come down. I mean, usually those, they do use explosives and they come down all at once. But I'm guessing it takes a longer time for the bridge to come down. But I still think that would be really neat. I guess you have to stay out of the way, right? And not in the traffic of the new bridge. But
yeah, I mean, if you're like driving over the new bridge that this bridge is being replaced with, you will slowly see it kind of disappear. So it doesn't really take, it's not that fast.
That's just cool.
Sometimes it's faster depending on the operation. But yeah, it takes some time.
I like to look ahead when we get closer to the end. Is there a bridge in the world that you hope you eventually get to work on, whether it's demo or repair?
I don't know. The Golden Gate's pretty cool.
I know, but he's working on that one. So there's lots of others.
I don't know. There's a lot of different bridges that are really interesting that we obviously have like pursuit projects.
Right.
And each bridge has like its own challenge. And that's kind of the beauty of what we do. There's not really two bridges that are the same or
what a great way to put
it. Two different designs that are similar. There's always a different challenge, either the size of the bridge or access or something different. Like it's
okay.
Interesting. Yeah.
What a great way to put that.
That was a great answer. Okay. So now we're to the part, although you've kind of given our listeners two challenges. Do you have any other challenges that they could learn stuff about?
Yeah. I mean, something that I think is easy for kids to understand is just playing with shapes. So if you have, let's say, a square, if you make it out of sticks and just tape the corners, it's going to be really easy for that square to like sway around. If you build a triangle, it's going to be really stiff. So you won't be able to move the pieces apart. And you can take that same square and put another stick in the middle. And that's basically what we call like a brace, or like a sway brace. That will prevent the square to like move around. So those are kind of interesting concepts for younger kids to understand. There is so many. Like if you build a tower with paper and then kind of shake it, it's going to maybe break easier if you have enough force. But if you build it and put like marshmallows on the corners, it's going to tend to move a little more. And that's one of the things we design when we design for like seismic forces in like California or like different high seismic zones. We want the building or the bridge to be able to like be ductile and move a little more than usual.
Sure.
Because that basically absorbs the force and it's not as stiff and easily breakable. So I think those are kind of interesting concepts that as engineers, that's what we do every single day. But that's kind of to put it in simple terms, that's kind of some interesting concepts to think about too.
That's perfect. And that any listener perfect. Can do that right where they are at home, at school, outside in the neighborhood. That's perfect.
Well, and you have a podcast too, Luis. Can you tell us what your podcast is so our listeners can go over and listen to yours too?
Yeah, definitely. My podcast is called Engineering Our Future. And it's basically all about helping students and young professionals in their careers. I come from Colombia. And when I came to the US and started school, I had like no idea what's going on. I just had to like ask questions to professors, to friends, to anyone that I call, but it was just a completely different experience. As I started volunteering with organizations and everything, started getting some of the similar questions that I had when I was a student. So now I just kind of talk to engineers, other students, CEOs of companies and just kind of learning what it takes to be a great engineer, what can students and young professionals do early on in their careers that are going to leverage and really help them stay ahead of the curve.
That's awesome. That sounds excellent.
That's terrific. Very good. We will definitely make sure our listeners head over that way.
Thank you.
Yes. So this has been a fabulous conversation. I learned so much about bridge deconstruction. Oh. I'm so excited. I have to go watch this video. So thank you so much for being on Solve for Kids, Luis.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And if you guys want to have me again, I'm more than happy to come back.
That will be wonderful.
That would be great.
We will be in touch.
We're going to watch that video first.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wasn't that a fascinating conversation? Came out of left field. Neither of us knew that Luis was a bridge demolition engineer. How cool was that?
Oh, that was so amazing. And I know I keep saying, but I mean, I would really like to blow one up. However, I still think it would also be cool to just watch them take one down. I would really like to be there when they make that first cut. Wouldn't you?
Oh my gosh, I was thinking about it, and I would like to be there when they finish that first cut so that one long bridge is now in two pieces. Is it going to work the way the engineers and contractors thought it was?
Right, and how they use the cranes, and the cranes can tell them, well, we think it's going to be this much load, but then they get too much and all this kind of stuff. To me, this sounds like it would be so much fun. So I hope all of you do the challenges, right?
Talk about a fun way to implement math. When all of us kids growing up were asking our teachers, when am I ever gonna use this math? Talk about an absolutely fun way to use math as a grown-up. And these challenges, absolutely. Finding out which shapes are the strongest shapes. What kids aren't building things already? And I don't know if you guys missed it, but Luis just gave us all permission to add marshmallows to all of our building projects. I'm doing that with my Zoe.
Yes, that will be lots of fun. So if you guys do the challenge and you build something, or even if you're just testing the load, right? Like holding your arm out with different things.
Right.
Snap a picture of it or send us if you draw a picture of it, tag us on our social media, which is at KidSolve at Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, or leave us a comment on this episode's page on our website, which is solveforkids.com, and you could be entered to win a Bridges book by yours truly.
And until our next episode, it is time to demolish this episode. So we'll hear us next time on Solve It for Kids.